The Infinitely Curious Woman. Written by Charari. Read by Crimson Moon. Sakura is 13 when she first finds the journals. Sakura is 14 when she's studied enough to understand them. Sakura is 18 when she finally accepts what she has become. Their air around her tastes like victory, and she thrives in it. Chapter 1. Day. Sakura is 13 when she first finds the journals. Her Shisho tasks her with cleaning and reorganizing the record room. Windowless and dark, the dusty archive is located deep below the Hokage Tower with layers upon layers of dust, suggesting that no living soul has been here for a long time. She sneezes once upon entering and tries very hard not to think about things skittering in the dark. Moving shadows, creepy crawlies. The atmosphere is a little scary and downright ghostly, and Sakura tells herself to get her shit together. She's Tsunade-sama's apprentice now. She's to bow to no one, and giving into her fears of insects or ghosts would be an insult to the only person in this village willing to give her a chance. So she does what she does best and makes the best out of an unfortunate situation. Most of it is boring. There's a number of ancient trainees, long-forgotten declassified mission reports, copies of archaic law that make Sakura shudder. Some of it is disturbing in ways that have nothing to do with blood or murder. Daughters used to belong to their fathers, and she's glad that those times are long gone. She doesn't want to imagine what her own parents would have done, given a choice. He had never approved of her career choice. Her fingers slide over yellow pages and moth-infested scrolls, sort through towering stacks of abandoned files in hopes of maybe, perhaps, finding something worthwhile. Kami knows Sakura has always loved reading, and surely, buried underneath all this waste, there has to be something. She fancies herself an archaeologist, a seeker and finder of truth. As sad as it is, boredom is abundant, tasks few and far between, missions completely absent. She thinks of Sasuke studying under a powerful, terrifying man in Naruto, gallivanting around the world and seeing all there is to see, and finds herself wanting. It is with that thought that her hands find something new. She picks up a heavy bundle of journals, bound in dark brown leather and tied together with thin, frayed rope. She almost places them off to the side, but then she takes a look at her watch and realizes it's close to midnight already. Her Shisho is probably drunk in her office, and if not, already passed out, nobody else has come to get her. She has tomorrow off, Sakura thinks, and all that waits for her at home is darkness with no one else in sight. She bites her lip for a moment before making her choice. She had lunch a few hours ago and doesn't feel hungry yet, so with a single sigh, she sits down on the only chair in the room and resumes cataloging her findings. The rope falls apart the moment she tries to unravel it, and she is almost wary to properly handle the journals. They're old, the leather binding cracked and dry, the pages thin, curled at the edges. Very carefully, Sakura opens the first book and takes a moment to admire the beautifully elegant, if somewhat spidery, handwriting that almost looks like calligraphy but isn't. Her fingers reverently glide over the words, almost enchanted by the practiced penmanship that makes her think of long and slender fingers, so infinitely more skilled and deliberate than her own. It is a silly thing to be so hung up on someone else's handwriting. But Sakura finds it hard to shake the fascination. She's never seen anything quite like it before. Of course, that is when she begins looking at the words and what they say, and for a single breath, she stops. She hasn't been studying medicine for long, but just long enough to realize the notes for what they are. Flipping a few pages back and forth, her eyes begin to glint and her heart to soar. Right here in this drear room of a prison, she has indeed stumbled upon a gold mine. Sakura is 14 when she has studied enough to understand them. Most of her time is spent bending over medical texts, anatomy scrolls, and books on other related fields of study. She has duties at the hospital now, and while she's elated to finally be useful and be able to put her practice to use, she can't help but find it somewhat lacking. She mends scratches, fixes broken bones, and administers antidotes. She heals, helps, and aids, but doesn't thrive. Something is missing. Something she can't name or put a finger on and makes her restless. Combat training helps with that. There's gratification being smacked around a training field, pushing her body to its limit, dodging and weaving and occasionally smacking her fist into trees, sending thin, sputtery webs of chakra into the trunks and watching as bark cracks, splinters, and evaporates into nothing. It is this pure and unbridled potential for destruction that calms her racing mind, if only for a moment. Sakura is civilian, clanless, forgotten by her sensei, and annoying. But she can make the earth crack, level hills, and one day she will shatter mountains. Exactly 1 year, 2 months, 1 week, and 3 days after first discovering it, she opens the journal again. She doesn't count the seconds, minutes, hours, days, weeks, months. She knows a lot about the human body now. Knows how to break it and repair it in a variety of ways. Knows how to break it down into its most basic components. Knows what makes people live and die. The first time she looked at the pages felt like discovering a new road into the unknown. And the second time feels like actually walking the path. Sakura reads and understands notes about anatomy that delve far beyond anything her Shisho has ever taught her. The author breaks down the genetic code into segments and fragments, translates it with a kind of combination of intellect, intuition, and sheer knowledge that seems almost unbelievable, and works their way through the origin of dojutsu and where they are anchored in the human body. They explain chakra infinities, where the information is hidden in a person's DNA, and how they directly influence someone's biology, how humans can be split into archetypes, and how there's no chaotic element in chakra, how there are patterns. Sakura learns more about the nature of chakra, the fragility of humanity, and the sheer genius of someone she has never met than she ever thought she would. Her Shisho is, of course, slightly impressed and rather pleased at the depth of Sakura's progress, though she would never say so out loud. Instead, she lets her observe increasingly complicated surgeries, and while Sakura aces the following surprise exams, she never once notices the glint in those more and more inquisitive jade eyes. If she had, maybe she would have been able to save her. After studying and positively dissecting the first three journals, it is upon opening the fourth that Sakura finally hits a wall. In hindsight, she understands that the first three issues have merely been preparation for the rest, to build a basic understanding and imparting the required knowledge needed to make sense of what follows. The wall is not one of ignorance. The first page of journal number 4 presents the profile of test subject number 1, Saito Kaori. Age 23, blood type 0, status, alive. Experiment, failed. Amended status, deceased. She drops the booklet in disgust and scrambles away from where it falls on the floor. A dark and damning sense of foreboding hits her out of nothing, and she doesn't want it to be true. Doesn't want to face the reality of having profited from human experimentation. Doesn't want to admire the man that took. So she doesn't. Every waking moment from then on is a nightmare. She walks on eggshells, completes her duty with shaky fingers, and struggles to look into Shisho's eyes. Her mind is running circles around her, taunting her with images of the blonde woman's disappointment, rage, and disgust, supplies her with harrowing visions of being tortured for information, exiled from the vision, or, can be forbid, executed. Sakura hides the journal under her bed, terribly cliche and completely unworthy of a real ninja, but is more her own disgust that she is running from the actual fear of discovery. Her paranoia controls her actions, and despite still learning from the woman, she avoids her Shisho more often than not. The blonde notices, she doesn't say a word, and even though she feels like there's eyes watching her wherever she goes, she's lost in her own thoughts more often than not, caught between shame, rage, sadness, loss. What she feels underneath everything else is a keen sense of loss. It is Ino who eventually shakes her from her endless cycle of feelings that threaten to suffocate her, and the moment is so quintessentially Ino that Sakura wants to cry. Without a single word, she drags her to Training Ground 4 and attacks her with a fever that is entirely unlike her. When they're done, sweaty, bruised, and spent, Ino demands to know why she has avoided her. She avoided everyone, is what Sakura wants to say, but instead simply apologizes. It is not enough, and she knows, but it's a start. They have dinner then, and go shopping, and meet up again and again between her hospital shifts and Ino's burgeoning career in TNI. And once again, everything is alright with the world. 3 months later, Team 10 asks her to fill in for Shikamaru for the Chunin exams. Sakura accepts and subsequently gets promoted. She gets to participate in minor surgeries now, has her own set of patients along with a fancy new title. She starts to learn about poisons from Shizune. Learns to mix antidotes under Shisho's guidance and receives access to the rarest medical scrolls and texts the blonde has to offer. She reads and studies them, and with a pang of disappointment, she realizes that none of it is new. It's dissatisfying and wrong, like an itch under her skin. The sense of being let down dwarfing everything else. She would hope for more. Send a line and Sakura wants more. Sakura wants. Sakura's 15 when she picks them up again. Naruto's back. Naruto's back, and so is Kakashi-sensei, and they're here, and nothing is awkward, and Sakura's happy. Naruto has the Rasengan. Kakashi-sensei is Kakashi-sensei, and Sakura can rupture the earth. They're here, they're back, they're the same, and Sakura... isn't. They try too hard. She doesn't know why the sight is so jarring to her. To see Naruto eat ramen and squawk about and bother Kakashi-sensei. To see Kakashi-sensei read porn, make fun of his students, and smile with his eyes. They orbit around the blonde, and Sakura tries very hard not to remember that she hasn't seen hide nor hair of her former teacher until he got back. Tries very hard not to feel left behind when, even now, they walk together side by side, with her trailing behind. Everything is as it was, and while once Sakura had wished for that to become reality again, now that it is, she finds that she hates it. They complete D and C ranks because, as a genin, Naruto can't do anything else, so they help around the village, escort merchants, clear up abandoned camps. Life and death is an everyday matter for Sakura, who gives and takes life in internal balance. She kills, and Naruto looks at her with betrayal etched into his face. Everything as it was. Nothing is. It's a combination of reasons that lead her to work at the hospital full-time. For one, Naruto can hardly stand being around her, and in turn, Sakura can't be around him without feeling like the worst sort of person. Kakashi-sensei has never been interested in trying to fix broken things, so he doesn't try to fix this. After three disastrous missions and three blunt mission reports, Shisho puts Team 7 on hold, again, and reassigns her. No matter how much Naruto's dismissal hurts, now she can breathe again. The hospital's an entirely different kind of stifling, one she can endure. She doesn't try to keep tabs on what he does because it hurts, hurts, hurts. He dives headfirst into the never-ending duty of saving lives, shattering boulders, and feeling lost and left behind and empty. Then she loses a man on the operating table. He's not the first. A platoon of Anbu was ambushed by Iwanin, and out of 15 members, 4 fell in battle. 2 succumbed to their injuries on the way home, 1 died to poison on the way in, and 3 died during surgery. She still has their blood on her hands when there is an emergency in one of the recovery rooms. Sakura has her hands in his chest when he breathes his last. She washes her hands, but the blood won't come off. It never will. Even now, she's still not enough. And she refuses to never be. No amount of resolve can stop the feeling of phantom bugs crawling over her skin and sickening feeling in her stomach when she takes the journals out of their hiding place. But she perseveres. She bites her lip, clenches her fingers, and then gets over herself. No matter how wrong it is, she reminds herself to be practical. Those lives were already lost. The monster created long ago, and a long string of atrocities well into the past. If those people can't be saved, the least she can do is honor them. Sakura spends night after night over those journals, reads about the terrible experiments this man has done, the crimes he committed, pure vileness of his actions. She abhors him, hates him, wants to pay him back for every person he ruined, but she's practical. She has to be. He's out of her reach, perhaps forever, but his research isn't. His hard-earned knowledge is at her disposal, and she has the background and will to consume him in his entirety. And if it saves lives, Kami be her witness, she will. Her performance skyrockets. Everyone notices. How can they not? And her Shisho seems pleased. Sakura knows more, understands more, sees more. She has countless new jutsu on her hand, and twice as many methods, all learned from a man who fears death and thus makes way for her to cheat it. She saves a man by stopping his heart so the blood stops flowing and the surgery becomes marginally easy without him bleeding out, then revives him with a minor lightning jutsu. She saves a child from choking on a rubber toy by cutting open its throat and retrieving the object while controlling blood loss, breathing, and brain activity, effectively keeping the body operating as if nothing was wrong. She saves Kiba. Goes down, down, down until she reaches his genetic code, rearranges it to alter his nature from earth to wind so the poison gets expelled from his tenketsu, because now it's not compatible anymore. Cleanses his system of the substance and reverts the change before anyone else can notice. He had been declared a lost cause. Sakura's hailed as a prodigy, and by now she's smart enough to bullshit her Shisho about her process. She's walking a very thin tightrope, and there's eyes on her now. Shizune is uncomfortable with some of her methods, calls them drastic and violent, but Shisho is more pragmatic. Sakura wonders for how long she'll continue to be. They give her all the surgeries. She has Anbu clearance now and is no longer a backup surgeon. Other people take her rounds and patients, and Sakura spends most of her time in the operating room. She no longer feeds chakra for rituals. She does them. The moment she kneels in front of a naked and dying patient with her Shisho sitting in the surrounding circle, leading the energy supply of five others is an epiphany. She has better control, more options, reached the point that even years and years of experience are not enough to offset what Sakura has in terms of perspective. Her Shisho is an exemplary medic. She revolutionized the field as verified fountain of knowledge and sheer ability. But where she is ruthless when needed, compassionate when appropriate, Sakura has no such reservations. Shisho sees the person whose life she has to save. Sakura sees a mechanism that's failing and has to be fixed. She's detached during surgery, calm and collected because the only thing stronger than her debilitating fear of failing is the near-dominating need to prove herself. Fixing is what she's good at. She can't afford to feel inadequate anymore. That's what makes her cold and ruthless enough to resort to means her Shisho would never consider. She convinces herself that she's doing it for them and not for herself. She's not that heartless. Is she? She reaches a point where she's completely isolated. She doesn't notice at first, because when she's not busy performing surgery, she's consuming his journals. When she's not doing that, she's keeping up with her physical training regimen or studying hospital records from the very few surgeries she failed. It all comes to a head one sunny day when Sakura is waiting for her food order to be ready. She doesn't eat ramen anymore, but found a nice little restaurant that supplies her with daily takeout. The chances of running into anyone she knows are slim. Unfortunately, slim doesn't mean non-existent. And she really has the worst sort of luck, she thinks when she sees them sitting around the largest table in the entire establishment. The entire Rookie 11, Sensei included, and the only missing piece is her. She hopes she can get away before they spot her. She saved Kiba's life, so she feels like he owes her, which he shows in all the wrong ways. He calls out her name, loudly and with a wave, and suddenly there's 14 sets of eyes on her. Sakura looks at them and realizes just how much time has passed since she last seen some of them. Yet the only thing she can think of is about how she's still wearing her scrubs underneath her lab coat, and her hair is unruly and once again long enough to reach her waist. She was on her way home after a 6-hour surgery, and that's what she tells them. It's true, but also an excuse to skip the socializing she has no energy for. Kiba doesn't get the message and scoots over so she can sit down next to him. Naruto looks at her for the first time in half a year and smiles. Concerned and apprehension flickering over his face. It is Kakashi-sensei's hard look that makes her sit down. He then smiles at her and jovially addresses her as Mrs. Head Surgeon. It's recognition of a kind, but no matter how happy she knows she's supposed to be, she can't quite suppress the voice inside her head that tells her it's too little, too late. For all intents and purposes, it seems like they moved on without her. But she's beginning to feel like it's been the other way around all along. It's those awful, awful training sessions with Naruto and Kakashi-sensei that bring her back down to earth in the most brutal manner possible. He absolutely wipes the floor with her. Realistically, she knows that he spends much more time training than she does, but the ease with which he beats her and spars again and again makes her furious. Doesn't matter that she's the reigning queen of medicine, surgical prodigy, mednin mastermind. Out here, in open combat, Sakura is still 12 years old and hopelessly outclassed. Naruto's sheer endurance and his annoying ability to bounce back from anything non-lethal she throws at him is all he needs to completely bypass her meager kit. Kakashi-sensei is too fast and too resourceful to even be hit. Her strengths make her an excellent medic, but that's all she has. There's no point in trying for ninjutsu with her average chakra well. Genjutsu is an entire area in which she has no expertise, and taijutsu, well. She's taken everything her Shisho could teach her, and it is only now that it starts to feel wrong. It wasn't her teachings that made Sakura truly great. She feels like the bells are tolling and the gates of hell are opening because it is now that she realizes precisely how damned she's become. Shisho is the one who had taken her and shown her a way to rise above her station, yet, in the end, his teachings will always suit her better. She can kill a man in more than 100 ways. Her anatomical and biological knowledge is rivaled by none, bar one. She can destroy and rebuild an organism from the ground up, can shuffle someone's genetic code, alter a person's chakra, regrow entire organs, theoretically, with the right equipment, synthesize an entirely new human being, should be enough. It's not. Her curiosity has always been her downfall. It drove her to obsessing over Sasuke. It's what made her read those cursed journals in the first place, and it's what gets her started on animals. Nobody is going to miss a wild rabbit or two, and Sakura thinks that between being eaten and serving a higher scientific purpose is like being stuck between a rock and a hard place. Chances are they're going to die either way, and at least with her, they have a chance of survival. She is an excellent healer, after all. Considering she basically lives in the hospital, nobody's surprised when she spends a little more time than usual down in the labs. Clearance is a wonderful thing, and so is the fact that she has her own lab, security lock and all. She tries to rewrite their DNA first and kills 3 rabbits in the process. Cutting and replacing slow twitch with fast twitch muscles doesn't work either. Something Sakura can't identify causes the body to reject them. She stops for a week and thinks about what she wants. The second she's in someone else's personal space, she can kill them. She has countless different ways to do that. She's no mid or long-range capabilities, but if she's fast enough, does she really need them? That's when it hits her. There's no need to even bother with genetics in the first place. Not when chakra is much more malleable. Naruto doesn't trust her, and that's fair. But he's still her friend, so when she asks for a blood sample for a general health checkup, he lets her near and offers her a vein. Bless his clueless, faithful heart. It's easy to get a print of his genetic code, but it's noticeably harder to find a way to synthesize his chakra. Theoretically, the easiest way would be to isolate the sequence that produces chakra and implant them in someone else, but that's far beyond what she's willing to do. She's not him. She will never become him. She tries it on a rabbit once, and the dead animal as a result is entirely expected. At this point, Sakura's biggest problem is that she knows exactly how to go about it. It's convenient and laughably easily. Hiding it and staying undetected is a much harder chore. Even if that part were as easy as the rest, it's a question of morality. 13-year-old Sakura would be horrified by what 15-year-old Sakura is doing, except all she's done so far is practically nothing in comparison to what she's considering. There's no equipment to create a clone, and it's absolutely impossible. There's no way. She closes her eyes and prays and tells herself again and again that she's not like him. Sakura has never been daunted by a corpse before, whereas now the hollow, empty eyes seem almost accusing. She feels judged by the dead lump of bone, flesh, and muscle, and rightfully so. The time frame during which she can work on this is terribly narrow, since the disappearing corpses would be quite obvious. Kami, help her, she's stealing corpses from the hospital morgue. Injecting the DNA and replacing the already existing sequences takes the better part of 5 hours, and Sakura is thankful that she has the day off and no scheduled surgeries. Biting a soldier pill before chasing the bitter taste with a stick of dango, she gets back to work, beginning the painstaking effort of nurturing as well as energizing dead cells. Reanimating a body and keeping it in a coma is a lengthy, if perfectly possible, task. For her, at least. It's all about providing enough energy to artificially revive the body, forcing all of the normal functions and coaxing it into latching onto the existing power, supplementing with its own. When the organism regains a basic level of function, Sakura cuts off the life support and feeds herself another soldier pill. She has a working host, and a brief scan reveals to her that it's already producing chakra that is identical to Naruto's wind nature. The sense of success and pride that floods her feels like waking up from a long, terrible fever dream. Sakura is 16 when she starts her own. It's a terrible folly to immortalize one's own criminal activity, but she knows the worth of well-documented research. How could she not? And she makes sure to always carry her journal with her. Somewhere along the way, she gets promoted to Tokujo. Not that the new rank really changes anything. In theory, she can hound the Jonin Lounge now, and has higher clearance, except she has all the hospital-specific access there is, so it hardly bothers her. She's the first to advance beyond Chunin, though Neji beats her to proper Jonin. It should mean something. Once upon a time, it would have. Her priorities have shifted, and if she finds a second to breathe, a second where she has nothing else to keep her busy, she thinks that, realistically, she can be happy anywhere. She doesn't go on missions or really keep in touch with anyone. All she does is fix whatever they point her at. She tries very hard not to think a lot. The idea that village loyalty really is quite the arbitrary concept seems too treasonous to be comfortable with. Shisho takes her to a bar for drinks once. They don't have much to talk about, and the distance between them seems so far and vast it feels impossible to overcome. She wonders when things started being that way. Wonders when she started feeling more kinship with a traitor than her own master. It takes her a month after creating the host to have passable results. She perfected drawing out and purifying Naruto's chakra essence and looks at the somewhat cloudy blue raw energy contained in a simple vial and smiles. She knows for a fact she's the first person in history to obtain the pure essence of chakra. He could have done it too if his control had been as good as hers. Spack to rabbits after that, and she wants to cry in frustration over how many she actually goes through before finding a way to make them live. There's no way to permanently replace someone's chakra since they require a complete different set of DNA, a lesson she learns in the early stages of her rabbit experimentation, which means she's setting herself up for something not entirely different from soldier pills. In function, at least. She doesn't think there's a way to get around the liquidity of essence of chakra, so probably more like a shot. Plainly administering the essence causes chakra poisoning. What actually works is simultaneously fusing chakra via syringe and siphoning equal amount of natural chakra from the subject, which is impossible to do effectively in combat. She hits a bit of a snag after that and is tetchy in the operation room for days. Inspiration strikes in the form of Hyuga Hinata. It's extremely rare for Sakura nowadays to attend any sort of communal training exercise, but Shisho has been nagging her to get out more, so there's that. As it happens, teammate and Naruto, whose training was overseen by Kakashi and an unknown man with mousy brown hair, are currently inhabiting Sakura's favorite training ground. She nods at Kakashi when he spots her and offers the expected pleasantries. She gets on the ground and begins to stretch while absentmindedly observing a one-on-one spar between Hinata and Naruto. He's obviously holding back, and part of her resents him for it. The same part finds great amusement in the blonde eating a Hyuga jab and finding himself with a blocked left arm. He hits her with a blast of wind, which is expertly deflected by some sort of Hyuga move that forces the air to go around the Aeris. Sakura blinks and nurtures the train of thought building itself in her mind, so the second the spar ends, she jogs over, not giving Naruto any attention beyond a wave and a small smile, concentrating on Hinata instead. Turns out the technique is a secret clan business, though. After a bit of prodding, the shy girl reveals that it's basically a concentrated burst of chakra, and truthfully, Sakura doesn't listen to her words after that. A controlled burst of chakra, released from her tenketsu without prior shaping or forming, an instinctive reaction, a split-second action. This is exactly what she needs. This is exactly what she's been doing for years. She can't help the self-satisfied smirk that's crawling onto her lips as she turns around and walks straight back to her lab. The first time Sakura does it, she gets sick. Violently. The procedure had gone over well, and there's no surplus of chakra in her system, but she has completely underestimated what a forceful intrusion of unshaped foreign chakra could do to her body. Side effects of her body cleansing itself of Naruto's chakra unfortunately include vomiting, a fever, and a raging headache. Her own control makes it possible to accelerate the process, and 2 days after, she's back to fiddling with the essence. In the end, it's an accident that solves her problem. She's never careless, except this once she is, and Sakura pricks her finger on a needle like an intern. One of the vials of essence gets contaminated. She's about to throw it away when she realizes that the two substances didn't separate or destroy each other, but mix instead. They mix until the cloudy blue is a pale lavender. She wonders if it's really that easy. So she goes again, except this time she doesn't get sick. Not for the first time does Sakura thank Kami for her unprecedented level of chakra control. While a smidgen of DNA is enough for foreign chakra to latch onto and convert itself to be compatible, chakra, like so many things in nature, seem to strive for harmony while also possessing the inherent ability to conform. She writes that in her journal. It does not actually mix with other chakra. It's a state of coexistence, and it makes Sakura wonder at the possibilities, just how many types of chakra she could theoretically store in her body. But that's a question for another time. She's skilled and finicky enough with chakra to draw upon either of the two powers floating through her pathways. Most of it's still her own, so inherently natural and pure that she never developed an elemental affinity. But there are bits and pieces of wind nature chakra circling in the tune of the rest. That power is what she harnesses as she falls into a light jog. From Shisho, she could learn how to mold and expel it into her fists and legs for concentrated explosions. From a library book, she had learned the theory of Shunshin, which is an incredibly fast movement achieved by circulating chakra through the entire body at staggeringly fast pace. A jutsu that comes easiest to wind users. But Sakura has higher ambitions than that. So she breaks into a run, takes the wind chakra, and cycles, cycles, cycles until she is racing through the woods so fast she might as well be flying. Ninja can Shunshin because they can cycle chakra in bursts. Prolonged use of that method is too hard for most to achieve, while also using jutsu or keeping track of a fight and their chakra flow. Sakura is not most. Sakura has perfect control over her chakra. It's all she ever had. And she made it work. After that, it's a matter of milking the host of countless vials of essence, all of which she carefully infuses with a tiny bit of her own DNA, and then stores in the freezer in her apartment behind a frozen slab of meat. During her more frequent training exercises, she practices administrating the shot and keeping her inner balance with increased speed and fluidity. Making use of the power is somewhat of a no-brainer, and a tiny bit of chakra in her eyes gets rid of the motion sickness. As for actually doing it? Sakura only has 4 words for that. It's fucking fantastic. The first body was easy. Sakura had been very careful in using a well-timed henge to make sure nobody noticed the lack of corpse. Her lab can be accessed only by her specific chakra imprint, so the initial body is safe. The issue is getting a second. It's a wild stroke of luck that makes her realize that she actually needs one. Hitake Kakashi, bane of doctors and nurses alike, notorious avoider of prolonged hospital stays and general medical menace, comes in for a checkup. Sakura sees and first scans her eyes for damage, mumbles a kai second, and checks for a henge third. The man himself seems terribly amused by her antics. It's much later when she's about to run the blood sample through the lab when she notices what she actually got in her hands. It's not only about intellectual curiosity, although there is plenty of that, but something else entirely. She has no idea how to test it without people figuring out that she's doing some pretty questionable things, but that's a bridge she can cross later. No, she has Hitake Kakashi's DNA. The key to his chakra. Never mind all the locks that could theoretically open. Hitake Kakashi has a summoning contract. She wants nothing more than to try and figure out if that would actually work. She has reached a point where she doesn't worry about the ethics of absconding with a second corpse anymore. Just how she can pull it off. It's easy not to think about that when the thought doesn't come to her in the first place. 3 days after getting her hands on Kakashi's essence of chakra, there's an emergency call from Suna. Sakura has to go, and she has to go now. Now that she's a person of secrets, she double and triple checks the lock to her lab until she's sure that there's no way anyone can enter, and goes and takes a step further by clearing out her entire fridge. She has enough money to invest into a high-end sealing scroll, which will keep all of her shots at a steady temperature, and seals her journal as well as the others too, just for security purposes. And because she's extra clever, that scroll won't open without Naruto's chakra signature. She has 3 backup shots in her medic's pouch, which should be enough in case anything happens. Of course, that is when she's told that she's to save the Kazekage's brother's life, and not much else. Apparently, her nigh-exclusive work at the hospital made her unfit for combat missions. It leaves a bitter taste in her mouth, and a snarky voice whispers in her head, asks her if she could get a nice lab somewhere else. She rolls her eyes at herself. It's not much of a no-brainer, she tells herself. Suna is hot, windy, and sandy as fuck, Sakura curses her lack of foresight. Considering she spends most of her time in her scrubs, her clothing choices are rather basic. Her preferred sleeveless and necklaced rib dress, with 2 front zippers for easy leg maneuverability, paired with smooth pants in either black or white and dark boots of a small heel, are not desert wear. She gets a few looks as she shows up in civilian garb, but the fact of the matter is that she had outgrown her combat gear a while ago and didn't find the need to replace it. She's really more of a lab rat slash surgeon these days than a proper kunoichi. Surprisingly enough, that doesn't sting as much as she thought it would. She has an ace up her sleeve and it helps her sleep at night. Being formidable as a result of hard work and questionable genius feels more rewarding than any fancy Kikai Genkai ever could. Maybe that's her superpower, she thinks. They had always called her a paper ninja, but even paper has sharp edges. The Kazekage is abducted. Apparently there's an extremely Jinchuriki murder-happy mercenary group gallivanting across the desert countryside, and there's a positively ancient woman standing in the way of her job. Now Sakura's aware that her lack of socializing and her almost hermity ways haven't helped her people skills, but maybe telling the old crew to get out of her way and decompose somewhere else is a bit harsh. Kakashi certainly seems to think so if the look of censure he gives her is anything to go by. But then the surprisingly agile senior vaults above her head and tries to murder him until suddenly neither are Sakura's problem anymore. Sometimes life just loves you. The poison in the boy's system, she finds, is almost beautiful in its composition. She spends one too many minutes on simply admiring the complexity of the toxin when she's interrupted by the sister who hisses at her to get a move on. Suna's a perfectly welcoming tourist place, by the way. Takes her a little longer than usual to break the poison into pieces and burn away the remnants with her chakra, but no time at all to repair the minor damage to his pathways. All in all, it wasn't much of an emergency, and surely Shizune could have been enough. Sakura thinks just a tad too loudly and is unfortunately overheard by Kakashi. He really seems to have a bone to pick with her. Or two. Doesn't matter, since only half an hour later they leave with the granny in tow and Sakura is, once again, left behind. She's not sad or disappointed anymore, and even her anger burns white and cold. She's not vindictive, and certainly doesn't want anyone to die. But surely being knocked around a little would put them and their hubris in place. They return with the errant Kazekage, without the grandma, and a kill on their hands. Apparently the old woman had done a fine job in killing her puppet-body grandson. And Sakura feels slight disappointment at not having been there and losing the chance to see how that even worked. Until his partner had ran off with his puppet's heart container. She also gave her life to revive the now Ichibi Liskage. There's a lot of medical shenanigans she missed out on, and that bothers Sakura more than missing out on the combat. It's a shame, she thinks, that the architect of the most artful poison Sakura has ever seen went out like a light. He sounds like he would have been fascinating to talk to if one ignored the missing nin criminal bit. With everyone saved and healthy, they're on their merry way again, and it's then that Sakura fully realizes the glaring line that separates her from the others. They're the fighters that go out into the world to slay monsters and rescue princesses. They talk about Akatsuki, and their goals, and their enemies, and how to save the world. Sakura runs on her own, keeping up quite easily, which doesn't seem noteworthy to anyone else, and all she thinks about is her second host, the possible applications of Kakashi's chakra and how to best test the summons without them snitching on her. Intellectually, she knows that they have drifted apart gradually, but looking back, she's not sure when it started. When she stopped going to training exercises? When Team 7 broke apart for the first time? When she read the journals? Before that? She used to be bitter and hurt and angry at them. Now all she wants is to be out of their way without being caught up in their schemes, growing stronger and smarter on her own. Because wasn't it on her own that she made the most progress? Years and years she worried about she slowed them down, but maybe, just maybe, they were the ones slowing her down. Everything had gone too smoothly, and while part of Sakura had been waiting for something to just go wrong for a while now, this isn't what she imagined. Everything has, quite literally, gone to hell in a handbasket. She got back, and after taking a shower in her apartment, Sakura immediately went to her lab, only to find her Hokage waiting for her. She's not sure how she got past the door, except apparently there's a Hokage level clearance that overrides the personal locks, and it's a bit of information Sakura honestly wished she had come by earlier. The woman is absolutely furious, but, Sakura notes while she's being yelled at, completely alone. The usual Anbu escort is absent, and for all intents and purposes, it seems like as if the blonde expects Sakura to just have a perfectly valid reason for the two comatose ex-corpses in her lab, and sees no need to get the authorities involved. She doesn't settle for the truth, but she doesn't lie, either. She explains that she's studying ways to perform safe chakra transfusions without Kikai Genkai or complicated rituals. When the woman demands an explanation for the hosts, Sakura realizes that she's forgotten that's not actually an expected sight. So she, first of all, assures her that they're not actually zombies and she's not capable of bringing anyone back from the dead, but that she merely forced the bodies to function until repaired cells and biology kicked in to take care of the rest. "They're absolutely gone," she says, "practically comatose with only minimum brain activity to regulate the necessary functions." Tsunade looks at her as if she's committed a crime of the highest natural order, and while she doesn't feel apologetic for anything she's done, the raging hurt and disapproval coming from the woman who had been a mother in all but name cuts deep. She's not arrested, which is a relief, but Tsunade seals her lab, which is, well, saying it's like being cut off from the air she breathes is a little dramatic, but Sakura feels like she's suffocating. On top of that, she's not allowed to perform surgery anymore. Suddenly, her sometimes drastic methods and things that she had done are under scrutiny in her former. And doesn't that word hurt? Shisho doesn't trust her around living people anymore. Not when she apparently had no idea just what Sakura is capable of. It's like she lost everything she's worked so hard for in the past 3 years, and the only lifeline is that Tsunade seems to comb through and pick apart everything Sakura's done on her own. There's no odd looks, no rumors, no Anbu stalking her. It's the only courtesy she can expect, and she clings onto a knowledge that she's worth at least that with all her might. Sakura spends a lot of time in her apartment. It's too much time to think, and drinks more sake than she should, since she burns through alcohol with an alarmingly fast rate. Nobody comes to look for her, since her being out of the picture isn't exactly news, and no one misses her anyway. She doesn't eat much, sleeps less, and feels more agitated with every day that passes. Thoroughly demolishing two training grounds doesn't help, and she's glad that her hospital hours paid so well that she has enough savings to live off them for the foreseeable future. She doesn't know what's coming, and she's afraid and buries herself in the only company that has been a steady presence throughout all these years. His notes on his experiments still somewhat disgust her, but he's familiar. She knows that finding his journals had been a simple coincidence, but right when she's on the border between being awake and falling asleep, she can convince herself that at least he has always believed in her. She sees him in her dreams, but he smells of sake, mint, and the faintest hint of vanilla. She's called into her office 2 weeks later, where Sakura wonders if this is the end of the line. There's nothing on the older woman's face. All the emotion she saw the last time they met is gone. In a tiny hidden corner of Sakura's heart, something breaks. And when she speaks, it's like the floor is being pulled from underneath her feet. "I've failed you," she says. "I'm sorry I failed you. I don't know how to fix it." It's not what Sakura expects, and it's not what she wants to hear. Tsunade continues, and her words burn like fire, searing her skin and etching themselves in her memory. "I made the same mistake as my teacher," she muses ruefully, eyes not looking at Sakura but into the past. "I had a brilliant student with more potential than I could foster, so ultimately, in a twisted stroke of poetic justice, you left me behind because you hungered for more." Sakura wants to argue, tell her that the woman was more than enough, but hold her tongue because she knows it's a lie. The woman has always been enough. The teacher? Not so much. Tsunade says that she's told no one and that everything that's happened is in between the two of them. And because of that, she asks her to be honest. Asks her how far she would have gone. Asks her what her goal is. Asks her if she can trust her. And Sakura's torn. Self-preservation yells at her to lie to her. To make sure she covers her bases and doesn't end up in a cell or worse. It's the lingering affection she has for her former teacher that wins out. The love she holds for her despite everything that's gone wrong and how she can't find it in herself to even within herself to even care for her former team anymore. So she's honest. Says that all she has ever wanted was to be equal to the rest of her team. To not be left behind anymore. To not be useless or annoying or a dead weight. Says that her goal was to find some ways to just be as good as the others. and then see what she could do, because she can do things nobody else can. Says that she doesn't know where she would have stopped, because it's her work that's the root of her self-worth. It's where she finds her own recognition, her genius, her worth, but that places her above all else, because powerhouses are a dime a dozen. There's Hyuga, Uchiha, Hatake, Jinjiriki, but out of all of them, she's the only one who's truly unique, truly self-made. She doesn't feel inadequate anymore, she explains, and that she finds her purpose in pushing beyond what other people believe to be possible. Sakura knows that her answer is the wrong one, knows exactly who she reminds Tsunade of, can see the pain in her eyes, and asks herself if that's really such a surprise? After all, he made her just as much as, if not more, than the woman herself. It's quiet for a long time, and eventually Sakura looks away, and without much of her former conviction, adds the final damning words. For giving me a chance and believing in me, I'll love you dearly for the rest of my life. Everyone's surprised when suddenly Team 7 is a thing again, and Sakura's part of it. She looks at Kakashi and knows that he expects a return of her Genin days. Helpless little Sakura of teammates who need to protect her. Naruto is wary but tentatively elated, and Sai is, new and not entirely unwelcome, if only because by needling Naruto and speaking badly of Sasuke, he causes one commotion after another and takes most of the group's focus. He calls her ugly once, but Sakura is way past those concerns of her and only smooths her dress, noting Naruto's eyes following the movement and taking careful note of her curves, and that's that. She does eventually acquire a stand-in jonin outfit and ties her hair in a ponytail, because hair that falls down all the way to her ass is terribly impractical for a frontline fighter. They're sent on easy missions, so she doesn't use her boosters now that her supply line has run dry. She's only allowed in the hospital if injured, and her apprenticeship is quietly and privately ended. Officially, she resigned from medical service, and while that one raised more than a few eyebrows, Hokage's word is law, and she doesn't owe anyone an explanation. There's one semi-persistent rumor about her having an affair with Tsunade, with the both of them covering their asses by cutting all official ties, but if the blonde heard of it or not isn't a detail that Sakura's privy to. The days pass slowly and nights even slower, and she's caught in a haze where nothing moves and nothing happens, neither forward nor backward. Just an infinite loop of being stuck. She knows that being deprived of everything that made her is the worst punishment she could have gotten, and Tsunade knows it too. This isn't living. She doesn't want to die just yet. Purgatory seems to mark the rest of her sorry existence, and Sakura can feel her sanity slipping through her fingers like tiny grains of sand. It's not that she hates her team. She doesn't. She feels indifferent towards them most of the time, patching them up whenever they require it, and other than that, participating in some fights and getting sidelines for others, and while it's not ideal, it's fucking hell, I want to die. It's bearable, if just so. They're a group of strong personalities, always have been, and such a composition can occasionally oversaturate the bigger picture. It's Naruto, who fancies himself a hero, who thinks that he's invincible and that everything can be turned into a friend and violence is wrong, who gives her such shit for every missing nin, bandit, and criminal she kills. It's like he missed the academy lectures on being a shinobi and having to take lives. She ignores it with a grain of salt most days, except when it gets too hard. Her peace is ruined, her existence crumbled, and she's back to this, so when he opens his mouth and glances at her disapprovingly, makes the scene one too many times. She really tests the limits of his Kyuubi-inflicted resistance by punching him so hard he lands in an entirely different area of forest. She refuses to come along to fetch him and gets a stern lecture from Kakashi, as well as a round of yelling from Tsunade for her troubles. Not once throughout the entire ordeal is she apologetic. She talks back to Kakashi, but not Tsunade. Never Tsunade. Every day is a dark, additional round of fucking unfulfilling existence, too much cheap sake and people she'd really rather silence permanently than listen to one more second. She knows mental illness and can see depression coming from a mile away, so she's entirely aware of what's happening. She's surviving, but not living. Nothing's great. Gray is seeping into her world and draining all the colors except for purple, yellow, and a very specific shade of forest green. And even that is slowly failing at keeping her above water. She goes through her days in a haze, completing missions, participating in spars, and dutifully ignoring everyone around her. It's hard to move, and even harder to get up in the mornings. Food is a rare necessity, and she can't believe that she's allowing herself to waste away like this. She could have been great. Hell, she was great. Was. Not is. And isn't that just a fucking tragedy, she thinks as she attempts to drown herself in a seedy bar on the outskirts of Konoha. Some drunk guy tries to feel her up and gets carried to the hospital to get his concussion looked at. Someone else slides into his abandoned seat, and while Sakurin knows that she should probably purge her system of alcohol right about now to either defend herself or alert the authorities, she just doesn't. Instead, she lets Uchiha Itachi talk. And listens. You didn't fail me. You set me free. In an otherwise empty Hokage Tower, a woman rages and screams and completely devastates her office and waits 2 hours before notifying her anbu that Haruno Sakura has defected from Konoha Gakure. End of chapter 1.